When Telemachus ordered his mother Penelope back to her quarters in Homer's Odyssey nearly 3 millennia ago, declaring, "Speech will be the business of men," he wasn't just having a family spat. He was articulating what would become the foundation of Western attitudes toward women's voices. This moment, the first documented silencing of a woman in Western literature, established a template that still shapes our world today. The Greek word Telemachus used, muthos, specifically referred to authoritative public speech. He wasn't merely asking for quiet, he was declaring that meaningful discourse belongs exclusively to men. Throughout classical antiquity, this exclusion wasn't subtle, it was deliberately paraded. Women who spoke publicly were characterized as unnatural, described as androgynized or barking rather than speaking. The Roman elite male was explicitly defined as a good man skilled in speaking. Even scientific treatises linked men's deeper voices to courage and women's higher pitches to cowardice. This wasn't just about custom. Public speaking constituted the very definition of masculinity itself. When women did speak publicly, it was only in two narrow circumstances: as victims just before their deaths, or occasionally to defend specifically female interests. Even then, they were marked as exceptions that proved the rule. What makes this ancient history so disturbing isn't its distance from us, but its proximity. Our modern traditions of debate and rhetoric draw directly from these classical roots, and so do our prejudices. Have you ever made a point in a meeting, been ignored, then watched a male colleague receive praise for repeating your exact idea? This universal Miss Triggs experience isn't random. It's the modern manifestation of ancient prejudice. Our language still undermines women's public speech, labeling them strident or whinging, words that trivialize their message and reposition them in the domestic sphere. The fundamental problem is cultural. Listeners haven't been conditioned to recognize authority in female voices. Women face tremendous resistance in traditionally male discursive territory, with their views often dismissed not as disagreeable, but as stupid. This silencing continues in literature and public life. In Henry James' The Bostonians, the female protagonist gradually loses her public speaking ability as she draws closer to her suitor, who reprivatizes her voice. James himself described women's speech as a generalized mumble resembling animal noises, echoing ancient Roman prejudices. Those who succeed often adopt androgyne tactics, like Margaret Thatcher lowering her voice, leaving women feeling like impersonators. Rather than forcing women to change, we need to examine what constitutes spoken authority and recognize how our conception of legitimate speech is gendered. "I'm going to cut off your head and rape it." This isn't from ancient mythology. It's a real threat received by women voicing opinions online. The internet promised democratized speech, yet for women, it often delivers new forms of ancient silencing. These modern threats echo ancient stories, like Philomelis, whose rapist cut out her tongue to silence her. Though technology has evolved, the cultural mechanisms remain identical. Women who speak publicly face threats of sexual violence. Online abuse weaponizes platforms designed for free speech. Social media sites that claim to democratize discourse become tools for enforcing ancient hierarchies. The common advice to block and ignore ironically achieves exactly what abusers want: women's silence. This harassment creates a chilling effect beyond immediate targets. Young women observing the treatment of female public figures learn the potential costs of speaking out. Many choose silence, resulting in a significant loss of perspective in public discourse. Most troubling is how normalized this abuse has become. We've grown accustomed to women facing rape threats for discussing video games or economic policy. This normalization itself represents a victory for silencers. The abuse becomes background noise rather than a recognized crisis of democratic participation. Why does a 2,500-year-old myth still shape how we view women in power? Our mental model for leadership remains stubbornly male. Women in power must adopt traditionally male characteristics to fit the part, from trouser suits to lowered voices. They're portrayed as outsiders, knocking on doors or smashing glass ceilings, metaphors highlighting their outsider status. Medusa perfectly embodies our anxiety about female power. Her gaze turned men to stone before Perseus beheaded her, with her severed head on Athena's breastplate symbolizing the reassertion of male dominance. This imagery persists today. During the 2016 election, Trump supporters depicted him as Perseus holding Clinton's severed head. Similar portrayals have targeted Angela Merkel, Theresa May, and other female leaders. Greek mythology offers numerous powerful female characters who serve as cautionary tales rather than role models. Clytemnestra thinks like a man while ruling, only to murder her husband and face consequences. The patriarchal order is restored when such women are subdued. Even the goddess Athena isn't truly female, but born directly from Zeus's head, suggesting an ideal male world without women. Modern parallels exist in how female leaders are praised for being more like men. The message, legitimate female power doesn't exist in our cultural imagination, and women who seek it must either masculinize themselves or face opposition. Have you noticed how differently we treat mistakes made by women versus men in positions of power? The 2017 UK election revealed telling disparities in how Diane Abbott's and Boris Johnson's equally disastrous radio interviews were received. Abbott faced brutal ridicule, while Johnson's failings were treated as fixable lapses. This creates a perfectionism trap, where women must be flawless while men are permitted human error. Studies show female executives spend up to 20% more time preparing for presentations than male counterparts, knowing their mistakes will be scrutinized more heavily. The right to make mistakes and learn from them is rarely extended to women. Female entrepreneurs are less likely to receive second-round funding after a failed venture compared to men, fostering risk aversion. Media coverage amplifies this double standard. Articles about female leaders are 30% more likely to mention personal lives and 40% more likely to discuss appearance. Their mistakes become defining narratives rather than isolated incidents. Defending women's right to occasionally be wrong isn't lowering standards. It's applying the same standards we apply to men. Some ancient writers recognized gendered speech dynamics. Ovid portrayed Philomela weaving her rape story into tapestry after being silenced, while certain rhetorical theorists noted uncomfortable parallels between male oratory and female seduction, questioning oratory's supposedly masculine nature. Today's resistance takes various forms. Women reclaim silenced voices through collaborative speaking, amplifying each other in meetings, challenging interruptions, and creating networks that ensure recognition of their contributions. Terms like mansplaining name previously invisible experiences, enabling resistance. Progress requires both individual tactics and structural change. We might reconceive power as collaborative capacity rather than dominance, and value authority derived from collective wisdom over individual charisma. Breaking the classical mold means critically engaging with our cultural heritage, not rejecting it. Understanding how our conceptions of power stem from gendered exclusion allows us to create more inclusive templates. This exclusion harms not just women, but impoverishes our institutions and limits our ability to address complex challenges.